Hare Krishna. I apologize for being a little late this evening. okay, this is the 30th of September in Mayapur, 2007. Yesterday we talked a little bit about unauthorized chanting, and I gave some examples, both inside ISKCON and outside ISKCON. Because that was mainly, we were talking about the Maha Mantra. But of course there's other forms of chanting as well. And one example of unauthorized chanting occurred when we were here in Mayapur in 1976. Prabhupada had just arrived on January the 17th. And there was one devotee here, his name was Anantaram Shastri. So Anantaram Shastri, as his name implies, was a very learned person. He wasn't very old, he was probably about 25 or 26. And he had joined with three other Shastris a year or so before. They were staying here, I think, in Mayapur, and then gradually the other three left. He was the last one that was still with us. So anyway, he was kind of a very learned person. He knew Sanskrit fluently. And he was, you know, one of those kind of persons. He could quote practically any verse, you know, from almost, or at least all our Shastras anyway. So this was on January the 25th. Prabhupada was out on his morning walk. And as we walked around, Anantaram Shastri joined us. Prabhupada expressed his satisfaction that such an educated man has joined our movement, and he instructed Bhavananda Maharaj to make sure that he is well looked after so that he may not go away. Although a somewhat self-conscious individual, Shastriji was eager to recite a poem that he had composed for Srila Prabhupada's pleasure. As we walked, and without asking first, he broke out into melodious verse, singing the praises of Bhagavan Sri Gopal, or at least it seemed so. His chanting was impressive to my untrained ear, but Srila Prabhupada was alert. When Shastri sang, "Nachiye, nachiye, aile Gopal," "My dear Gopal, please come before me, dancing," Prabhupada stopped him. "Do not manufacture knowledge. You take knowledge from Bhagavan. You do not order Bhagavan. You just follow Bhagavan. That is not wanted. Do not write concocted poetries. This is not beneficial. You simply follow." Prabhupada told him that his singing was sense gratification because he was giving an instruction to Gopal. "Please come to me, Nachiye," dancing. He stressed that our process is to take instruction. "It is all nonsense," he said. "Why you should ask Gopal to come to you? You cannot order, you must follow. We are to carry out the order of God, not to order God to carry out my order. That is a mistake." Prabhupada went on for some time, condemning the attitude with which people generally approach God. He explained that in India, they sing a traditional arati song, which repeats the words, "Sabko Sampati De Bhagavan." De Bhagavan means "give me." And in the West, he explained, the Christians also have the same idea. The whole world, Prabhupada observed, they have accepted God as an order supplier. I order, you supply. The Christian church also, God give us our daily bread. And if God doesn't give, then God is dead, Tamal Krishna Maharaj added. Dead, Prabhupada said. This is going on. And our prayer is, "I don't want anything. Simply engage me in your service." This is the real prayer, which is taught by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Prabhupada wasn't too impressed with Shastri's poetical abilities. At least, not his philosophical grasp anyway. Later on he wrote three nice prayers in glorification of Srila Prabhupada, which will come up later on. And then he left. He didn't last very long. He left when Prabhupada was on his last world tour in 76, when we came back to Vrindavan. No more Shastri. Okay, another example of somebody making something up. In 1976, Prabhupada was here. He was inspecting the front wall, and there were just, actually when we arrived on the 17th of January, we had the official opening of the front gate. So in those days, our gate was the biggest gate. And, then when the other mats saw how big our gate was, then gradually they all built themselves bigger and bigger and better gates. But in those days, our gate was as big as some of the temples. So when Prabhupada arrived, they had a nice big ribbon across the front gate. Prabhupada cut it with a pair of scissors, and then we all entered. So then later on, because they were still finishing off the front wall, so Prabhupada went out on the front road there. He walked up and down. And again, in those days, there was not one single shop or vendor of any kind. Not even a guy with a wheelbarrow, what to speak about anything else. It was completely clear. And so Prabhupada told them, now you make some panels, like sculpt them in cement, all the way down the wall. And then in each panel, you can paint pictures of my books. Then, that will advertise, it will look attractive, and it will advertise my books. So they started to do that. So then on August the 19th, 1976, Prabhupada had just returned to India. He was down in Hyderabad. He opened the new temple down there and had his Vyasa Puja. And Jayapataka Maharaj and Gagamuni Maharajas, they had flown over for the event, and then they made a report on Mayapur. So last March, Prabhupada had asked that the large panel sculpted in cement along the front wall be painted with advertisements for his books. He was satisfied to hear that two artists, Anakadundabi and Pandu Prabhus, have completed about 17 of the panels. So the work was going on. Pandu lives just down the road here. He later on took initiation from some Babaji's and basically is not in our line anymore. And you'll see why in a minute. And Anakadundabi, he was a very tall English devotee. I think he was just about 2 meters, actually. Very tall, skinny guy. And if you look on the doors of the Lotus building, you'll see there's paintings on all the doors. So he did all of those. So anyway, then 1977, then Prabhupada came back to Mayapur. And on February the 9th, then he decided to go out onto the front and inspect all the paintings that had been done there. So as we walked on Bhaktisiddhanta Road, and he inspected some new paintings that had been done on large panels on the wall itself by a Western devotee, Pandu Das. Prabhupada didn't say much, and I got the impression that he wasn't exactly overjoyed by what he saw, but he wasn't dissatisfied either. If actually you even look now, you can still see some of those panels still have, the remnants of those paintings on them. Then he saw a Bengali verse which was written on the wall, and he stopped and he said, "Where does this verse come from?" Pandu admitted that he had made up the verse himself and then had it translated into Bengali. And then he painted it underneath one of Prabhupada's books. Prabhupada was not at all happy, and he shook his head and admonished him quite strongly not to do it again. "Do not dare like this," he told him gravely. "You should always remember, do not manufacture ideas." Pandu asked him, "Well, shall we change this one?" Prabhupada told him, "No, it is all right, but do not dare like that." And Pandu nodded, "Yes." Yeah, I got the impression when I saw Pandu, he was more interested in seeing whether it was okay to leave it on the wall than he was in taking note of Prabhupada's admonishment. And as I say, later on, of course, he left. Within about a year or so, he'd gone, and I think he took initiation from Lalit Prasad Thakur, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's younger brother. Okay, so that's a couple of examples. Don't make things up, otherwise you're running a big risk. Do not dare. So a little bit about just the chanting of Sanskrit. This is another irony, this example. You'll see why in a second. This was on July the 1st, 1976. And Prabhupada was visiting New Vrindavan. And he had stayed in his room that particular afternoon. And Pushyakrishna Swami, Prabhupada's secretary at that time, he had a series of questions, I think maybe 21 questions or something like that, from a journal called Bhavan's Journal. I don't know whether it's still published nowadays, but it was one of the few spiritual journals that was still being published in India at that time. And they had noted the spread of Hinduism all around the world. It was becoming very popular. So they had written down a series of questions which they sent out to all the leading gurus. And then every month, they were publishing the replies. So the questions were sent to Srila Prabhupada. And Pushyakrishna was, you know, he'd already had a couple of sessions with Prabhupada, asking some of the questions. So this was another session. So the first session, question 10, caught my attention. It asked, will mantras lose their sanctity or holiness if they are not in the Sanskrit language? Prabhupada explained that they are transcendental sounds and cannot be changed. The sound must be vibrated, he said. You cannot translate it. The sound as it is. Just like Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, the sound must be produced. You cannot translate. Then it will be artavada, or speculative interpretation. So that is prohibited. You cannot interpret or do other way. The sound vibration must be there. Then it will continue in its sanctity. Pushyakrishna asked for clarification. Is that to say that mantras can be written in Devanagari script or in Roman letters, but that the sound must be the same? Yes, Prabhupada said. The sound is important. So who knows what happened in New Vrindavan about 10 years after this statement. Yeah, they changed all the chanting of all the mantras and wrote them all out in English, and then they abandoned all the Sanskrit chanting, and it was like that from at least 8 or 10 years, I think, yeah? Because the person that was in charge there got the idea that Sanskrit was a barrier, you know, for the ordinary people. They wouldn't understand what was being sung, so we'll sing it all in English and then they'll understand. But of course, how do you translate, you know, the Govishtakam prayers? Samsara Dava Nalalita Loka. But that's what they did. All the prayers. So when you went to Mangalati, it was all in English. Now in about 1994, New Vrindavan, of course in 1986, New Vrindavan was kicked out of ISKCON for some time. And then in about 94, they were starting to make a comeback and rejoin ISKCON. So I went there. I just released volume 3 of my diary. And so I went and visited there. I think I was one of the first ISKCON devotees to kind of go in there after, you know, the changes, when they were starting to make a comeback. And when I got there, there was a very unusual situation where they'd restarted having all the Sanskrit mantras for their aartis, but there were still some remnants of the previous regime's, you know, followers there, so they were insisting on having their English version as well. So what was happening was I went to Mangalati, we sang the Samsara prayers, and, you know, Sri Krishna Chaitanya and the Maha Mantra. And then at the end of that, then this gentleman comes up to the microphone with an accordion, and then he starts singing them all over again, but in English. And then again for Guru Puja, they did the same thing again. Then I heard after a couple of months, then finally they got them out and everything was returned back to normal. But as I say, it was an irony, because right there in New Vrindavan in 76, Prabhupada was saying, you cannot change the sound. If you interpret it, or if you translate it, then it will be an interpretation. So, okay, some other corrections in Kirtan. This one we answered last night. Ram Nomi, April 9th, 1976. At midday arati, some devotees were singing over the microphone a mantra glorifying Sitaram. Raghupati Raghava Raja Ram, Patita Pavana Sita Ram. And they were also chanting some other mantras. Prabhupada sent me into the temple with the message that they stop. He wanted them to chant simply the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, since it automatically includes Lord Ram. He said that other mantras were not necessary. And then I've got a note here. According to Mr. T.R.K. Samaya of the Bombay Sarvadaya Mandal and the Gandhi Book Center, somebody else wrote this mantra with the suggestions of Mahatma Gandhi. So I got that. It was an email sent to me in 2005 when I'd inquired whether that mantra was made up by Gandhi or not. So he said somebody else did it, but with suggestions from Gandhi. So, okay. Another correction in chanting was, this was something that I got. This was in September of 1975. And it was a couple of months before I joined Prabhupada's party. I was the temple commander in Vrindavan. And Prabhupada had emphasized when the temple opened that he wanted the midday arati to be attended by all the devotees, not just like in the West. It used to be the morning program, and then we would just, you know, go out in Sankirtan, and then we would have an evening program with everybody coming to the evening arati. But Prabhupada told us in Krishna Balaram Mandir that we should have all the devotees attend the midday arati as well, because so many people were coming. So I was chanting in the temple during the midday arati. I was leading the kirtan, singing over the microphone, and I was also chanting the refrain. Prabhupada sent Upendra out to tell me to stop chanting the refrain. He said only the lead should be broadcast on the speakers and not the refrain. So, as we've been telling our general managers here, that, you know, this constant bombardment, you know, where they sing the lead and then they sing the refrain over the microphone, it's just too much, and Prabhupada didn't like it. You sing the sing the lead, then everybody responds, but not over the microphone. Actually, what happens is that if the refrain comes over the microphone, in effect, what you end up is with two people singing the kirtan. One leads, the other follows, and everybody else is drowned out. Yeah, so it actually inhibits everybody from participating. So it's better just the lead, and that's it. Of course, in Lord Chaitanya's time, there were no microphones. Yeah, they were. It was just the voice. That's it. So I guess not many people were going deaf by the age of 30, as they are in ISKCON. okay, another correction in Kirtan. March the 5th, 1977, here in Mayapur. So that year, Jayapataka Maharaj had decided to hold a Kirtan competition, and it was advertised here and there and everywhere that ISKCON was having a Kirtan competition and different groups were invited. So Maharaj was trying to think of different ways to popularize the Gopunima festival. So as a result, there were different groups arriving from various villages and towns all over Bengal. And on top of that, when our devotees arrived from the different yatras, then they were also divided into their groups, and then they had a special stage just for doing this kirtan competition. And every evening, then maybe four or five different groups, you know, either some different yatras, ISKCON yatras, or some different groups from around Bengal, they would go on the stage and then they would do their kirtan performance. So this particular evening then, March the 5th, there was a kirtan competition which seemed to be going very well. Different groups from around Bengal had been invited, and groups of our devotees representing different yatras from around the world are all competing. The best group was to be awarded some prize. So each evening, several different groups had been on the stage doing their chanting. In the evening, Prabhupada was coming out of his room onto the veranda to go to his bathroom. He stopped for a moment to hear one of the Bengali groups, and he asked me what I thought of it. So, that was always an awkward moment. Because you couldn't second guess what Prabhupada was going to say, so you were always very cautious. Shruti Kirti writes about this in his book too, that when Prabhupada asked you a question like that, you know, you were really hesitant to give the reply in case you got it wrong. So I wasn't sure what to say. I was reluctant to reply just in case I got it wrong. A moment later, Prabhupada asked me if I wanted to know what he thought of it. So I said, oh yes, Srila Prabhupada. So Prabhupada replied with a smile, I think they are doing it simply for money. Such chanting is worthless. And he walked off to the bathroom. He later condemned it, saying that the groups that had come were doing it simply to get some name and fame. Actually, when I heard them singing, when Prabhupada asked me, what do you think about this? I was thinking, well, it sounds pretty nice. But Prabhupada immediately detected, you know, what was really going on there. So needless to say, I sent word down to Jayapataka Swami what Prabhupada had said, and he has decided not to hold it again. So that was the first and last kirtan competition at Gopurnima in Mayapur. Okay, some other examples of offensive chanting or unauthorized chanting. This was on December the 23rd, 1976, it says here. Maybe it's not. This might have been 1975, actually. I think this was 75. We had a long discussion. This was out on a morning walk on Juhu Beach. So we had a long discussion about the relationship between Lord Vishnu and Lord Shiva. At one point, the famous battle between Banasura and Krishna was mentioned, where then the ultimate weapons of Lord Shiva and Lord Vishnu were pitched against each other. The Shiva-dwara produced intense heat, but the Vishnu-dwara, which generated intense cold, was the victor. An Indian devotee said that when Prabhupada was very ill in Vrindavan, this was I think in 74, with a high fever, he had prayed that the Vishnu-dwara might reduce his fever. So we were just reading the Bhagavatam when you were sick. Anybody suffering from fever means that you should read such and such a portion, and so it should come down. It seemed like a nice sentiment, but from Prabhupada's pure devotional viewpoint, it wasn't acceptable. No, Vishnu should not be utilized for curing your fever. That is not bhakti, that is business. Kirtananda Swami asked, can a disciple invoke Lord Vishnu's help for serving his spiritual master? Prabhupada replied more enthusiastically. He also revealed something of his inner mood in his struggle to establish the Bombay temple. Yes, that is nice. That is for curing Vishnu's representative. When we were in danger, there was so much obstruction for constructing the temple, and we prayed to Krishna that it should be stopped. We prayed to Krishna, please give your protection. So that is for Vishnu's purpose. So a subtle difference there. You can't pray to Vishnu, you know, for your own help, but you can pray if it's for increasing devotional service. So it depends on your mood, how you deal with it. And of course there, what Prabhupada said there, that he prayed to Krishna for protection, that means that Mr. Nair was causing so many problems, and he had been trying to cheat Prabhupada. He thought that Prabhupada was an old sadhu with more money than sense. Yeah, he didn't know what actually he was getting involved with when he allowed Prabhupada, you know, to buy the Juhu Beach property. All along what he had done was he had intended to take Prabhupada's initial deposit and then by trickery cheat him out of it and then resell the property for more money to somebody else. But once Prabhupada got involved in that and he put his money down, there was no way that he was going to let it go. And at one point, actually, this man was so clever that when Prabhupada went, I think, up to Ahmedabad, he had left Brahmananda and Tamal Krishna there in Bombay. And somehow or another, this Mr. Nair had had a meeting with them and actually persuaded them to give up any rights that they had to, you know, the Juhu Beach property. And then immediately afterwards, Prabhupada heard about it, he immediately came back down from Ahmedabad and chastised them, and then again started fighting with Mr. Nair. Anyway, so what happened was, I think in 73, Prabhupada was in Auckland. He'd just been to Australia, and then he went to Auckland, New Zealand, and then he got a telephone call, and the call was that Mr. Nair had died. He had dropped dead of a heart attack. And when Prabhupada heard that, he said, "Oh, Haribol." He said, "I prayed to Krishna for this." He said, "Of course, as Vaishnavas, we don't pray for these things." He said, "But this man was causing so many problems." He said that I had to ask Krishna to do something. So, but don't anybody take that as a precedent. Okay. Now then, in 1976 and 77, there was a controversy that developed about the Back to Godhead magazine. And again, it was the same kind of rationales that, you know, led these devotees in New Vrindavan to change the mantras from Sanskrit into English and these kinds of things. Rameshwara, who was the BBT trustee, he had written to Srila Prabhupada in late 1976, asking if, when they published the BTG, they could put the author's English name as well as their Sanskrit name, because he felt that that would make it more accessible to people on the street. You know, people would, they'd get the Back to Godhead and then they'd see all these Sanskrit names and it would put them off. So he felt that if we put the names in English, then it would be better. So Prabhupada said okay. And then he also said that he was trying to think of ways and means of making the Back to Godhead, you know, more accessible to the general public. So what happened was that in early 77, Back to Godhead came out, and there was at least one article in there by Rupanuga, about 5 pages long, about farming. And in the entire article, it didn't mention Krishna even once. It was just about, you know, organic farming, basically. And, you know, Vanashram. But it never mentioned Krishna anywhere. So, anyway, the whole thing became very controversial, whether this was a good policy or not. So when Rameshwar arrived here in Mayapur for the festival in 77, then there was a very long discussion between him and Srila Prabhupada. And then the end result was that Prabhupada told them to take the BTG back to the standard that it used to be at. He didn't approve all the changes, mainly because other devotees were complaining about it. So one of the points concerned another new feature that they'd included in the Back to Godhead, which was called the mantra page. So this shows small pictures of persons who were not full-time devotees, but who are chanting, and then a comment from them underneath. It is meant to convey that anybody can chant without having a shaved head and robes. So Prabhupada pointed out that getting people to chant is all right, but they must understand that there is a process for chanting. They must come to the initiation point, regardless of whether they live in a temple or not. I asked whether it's an offense to advertise the material benefits that come from chanting, and Prabhupada confirmed it is aparad. He elucidated this point, that they must understand that chanting means that there is a process and they have to come to that point and then it will become effective. Otherwise, he said, if they do not come to this point, then there is a chance they will be degraded instead of elevated because of their increased offenses. The process means one has to follow the regulative principles. And he stressed this again and again, that they have to know the proper process in order to get success. So, you know, they were advertising, oh yeah, I work in an office, you know, I do this job and I chant Hare Krishna, it gives me peace of mind. Yeah. Or when I chant Hare Krishna on the bus or the train going to work, I feel happy. So like that, this was the mantra page. So that was also a bit controversial, and then Prabhupada confirmed, unless you actually tell people that the real purpose of the chanting, of course, is to come to the point of surrendering to Krishna, then it will be ineffective. If you start chanting it for material purposes, thinking you're going to get some material gain from it, then actually you'll start to make offenses in chanting, and then that will degrade you instead of elevating you. Okay, so that's a few examples that we've given over the last couple of nights about unauthorized chanting. There's then, of course, naturally a question, is there an authorized way to sing new mantras and songs? And one example of that, when I was traveling with Prabhupada, there was a letter from Shrutadev Das on October the 30th, 1976. He was at that time the temple president at Bury Place in London. So he wrote a series of questions, philosophical questions, but one of them was also practical. So he said, do we have your permission to sing Radha London Ishwara Radhe Prabhupada Prandana Hai? And Prabhupada replied, yes, you have my permission to sing as you have requested. So, in other words, if you have a new mantra, or you know you want to sing something, a variation, and you're not sure, then ask. That's the process. If the spiritual master approves it, then it's okay. So, because I thought that this question was very relevant, considering the previous month was when, in September, we had had that conversation, and Prabhupada had said that if you sing a mantra that's not given by the spiritual master, it's Guru Ravagya, even if, you know, technically it's correct. Okay. Let's see. So that's a few things about Kirtan. Any questions up to this point? Yeah. When Prabhupada was visiting other temples, did the devotees chant the names of their deities? I know we used to, when we were in, before I joined Prabhupada's party, we used to in Sydney and Melbourne. When I was traveling with Prabhupada, I don't recall ever going to a kirtan without Prabhupada being there. And whenever Prabhupada was there, of course, he led. I mean, because I was Prabhupada's servant, I never went to Mangalarti because somebody had to be there on call all the time. So Prabhupada insisted that all the members of his party must go to Mangalarti. So, you know, the secretary and Pradyumna was traveling with us most of the time. They were all expected to go, but I never actually went to an arati without Prabhupada being there. So I really can't recall whether, you know, what the local devotees were doing or not. But my impression is that they were. Actually, that's not correct. I know Jayadvaita Maharaj has his own impressions, and he's very forceful about expressing them. But, you know, just like he's also fond of saying that in Prabhupada's time, we never used what we call the wampas, you know, which are these big, huge symbols, you know. But that's not true. In Australia, we use them all the time. And Prabhupada, you know, never had any problem with that. And we did, well, we certainly definitely sang Jai Prabhupada. I mean, it was going on, and the proof of that is that at one point there was another correction that came out where devotees were singing, you know, Jaya Guru Dev. And then Prabhupada corrected that because he said, you don't sing Jaya Guru Dev because it's impersonal. It could be anybody. But he gave permission that if you sing Jaya Guru Dev, then you can, if you sing Jaya Prabhupada immediately after that, then Gurudev means Prabhupada and then it's okay. But you can't sing just Jaya, you know, Jaya Jaya Gurudev by itself. It's impersonal. So that means that we were singing in Prabhupada's time Jaya Prabhupada. And as far as I can remember, we were also singing Nitai Gaur Hari Bol as well. And we were certainly singing, you know, Jai Satchinandana, like that. You know, that was, of course, we knew about the prediction of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So every year, you know, the devotees, as they came to Mayapur, they'd all get into singing, you know, Jai Satchinandana, Gaur Hari, and like that. So it was definitely going on. Yeah. Okay. How do we come to a standard? And we have this year formed a Kirtan Standard Committee. We're actually going to meet in November in Vrindavan. And we're going to, you know, look as at as much evidence as we can. We'll take as much information as we can from, you know, anecdotal evidences and recorded materials and written things. And then we'll, you know, by consensus, try to come to some understanding of what's acceptable and what's not. And then it'll be up to the GBC to decide, you know, what they want to accept or not. I think it's going to take us, a number of years before we get the whole thing sorted out. But, you know, things are getting a little out of hand right now. And there's a lot of devotees that are concerned. You know, last year or the year before, I was in a place in Eastern Europe. I mean, the problem is that many of our gurus and sannyasis don't know what the standards are either. So they're also just, you know, doing whatever they get inspired to do. And sometimes it's just, you know, at least there are others of us that feel that it's just, you know, not correct and that Prabhupada wouldn't tolerate it. One example of that that I feel very strongly about, I've already mentioned, is Radhi Radhi Govinda. Another example, what I heard when I went to Eastern Europe, was that there was a kirtan going on. One of our main kirtan leaders in ISKCON was leading it. There was about 500 or, no, more than that, probably 800 or 1,000 devotees at this festival. And then right in the middle of it, they suddenly switched into, all the girls were on one side, the boys were on another, and then all the girls suddenly started chanting, Radhi Radhi, and then all the boys replied, Shaim Shaim, and then they got into this, Radhi Radhi, Shaim Shaim, Radhi Radhi, Shaim Shaim, like this, and it's going on and on like this for about 10 minutes. I wanted to just get up and walk off the stage, but I just felt, you know, it was probably too controversial and impolite. But there was a number of us, you know, that were on the stage there that weren't happy with that. And I brought this up in private with several of the gurus that encourage this kind of chanting. And they're just, at this moment, they're not willing to, you know, accept that there's anything wrong with it. So this is something that's, you know, we're going to be discussing. Personally, you know, it's a concoction. It never went on in Prabhupada's time. And I can, if my experiences with Srila Prabhupada is worth anything, I'm willing to go before the deities and swear that Prabhupada would not tolerate that kind of chanting. He just wouldn't have it. That's, you know. Anyway, there are strong feelings that get invoked. And as I said last night, we have to come to some kind of acceptable standards. Otherwise, things will get more and more out there, and more new things will come in, because that is the material tendency You know, they always want something new, and everybody wants to distinguish himself from everybody else. So every kirtan leader wants to bring out his own tune, a new tune, or a, you know, a new mantra, or change a mantra in his own particular way, so that he can become noted, you know. So we have to be very, very careful. Shastra Prabhu, a noted kirtan leader, yes. Yes. Yad yad acharati shrestas. Yeah. Whatever a great man does, everybody else will follow. But sometimes even the leaders don't get it right. That's why you have three authorities: guru, sadhu, and Shastra. Yeah, no, Guru is not the only authority though. Yeah, of course Prabhupada was the only authority for ISKCON. He was the founding Acharya, and his books are the basis for everything that we do. But you know, in a group or in an institution such as we have, then there is room for discussion. And you know, there are, I mean, it's like, in some respects, it's a bit like management. Everybody has their own idea how to manage something, and there may be two or three different ways of doing something, but you have to come to some kind of an agreement what's the best way, you know, to approach something. So, it's not that because you're a guru, then every single word that comes out of your lotus mouth is absolute, you know, and can't be corrected. It's not like that. That's a misunderstanding of what it means to be guru. Guru means that, you know, he's according to Shastra. Yeah. But sometimes even a guru, he may be corrected if he gets something which is not exactly right. That's what the sadhus are there for. So they're also an authority. Yeah. It doesn't mean that the guru's not bona fide. Yeah, but actually in spiritual life everybody's always learning. Even a Mahabhagwat is always learning more about devotional life because Krishna is unlimited. So it's not, you know, that we shouldn't have this idea that because somebody's, you know, acting as a representative of the Absolute, that that now means, because, you know, he's now initiating others, that everything that he says and does is, you know, absolutely perfect in every respect. That's a misunderstanding about spiritual life. Yeah.
In regards to the statement that anything that comes out of the Buddha's mouth may not be absolute, would you say the same thing in regards to Srila Prabhupada?
Sorry?
Srila
Prabhupada's position was unique. Prabhupada was a personality whose appearance was predicted 500 years ago by Lord Chaitanya himself and by a succession of previous acharyas. I don't think that we can compare Srila Prabhupada to anybody, you know. He has a unique position in the Gaudiya Vaishnava history. Nobody has done what Prabhupada did. You know, even in our previous acharyas. Of course, Bhaktivinoda Thakur began the process. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati continued with it. But Prabhupada was the one who actually took, you know, the holy name all around the world. And to do that, you know, you have to be really, really extraordinary. So I wouldn't question anything that Prabhupada said. But I wouldn't say the same thing about, you know, those who are coming after him. It doesn't mean that they're not bona fide, but it does mean that we can discuss, and by, you know, sharing information, we can improve or, you know, come to better understandings about various ways of performing devotional service. Prabhupada said that there's disagreements even in the spiritual world. Yeah, so there are different opinions about, you know, how to do things in spiritual life. And they're not necessarily incorrect just because the opinions differ. Yeah, everybody's an individual. Krishna is unlimited. There are unlimited ways, you know, to serve Krishna and approach Krishna. So, again, I'm saying the same thing, that even if one is a Mahabhagwat, it doesn't mean that he doesn't have anything to learn. Yeah, a Mahabhagwat means that he's fully 100% absorbed in serving Krishna. Yeah, but there are even things that Mahabhagwats don't know. And even the position of a Mahabhagwat sometimes can be challenged. Lord Chaitanya says that even a Mahabhagwat, if he hears Mayavadi philosophy, he can fall down. It's right there in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So, you know, we have to understand that spiritual life is dynamic. There are many facets to it, there are many features to it. And as many Vaishnavas as there are, then everybody will have his own understanding and his, you know, realizations. So by sharing those with each other, we can improve our devotional service between us. That's the idea. Yes. Yeah.
I don't know if you read the BTG nowadays, but I noticed they have this Sangha, this thing called Sangha, and it's these Gurukulis, I know some of them keep long hair or girls, and you call them up or you write an email asking for advice and things like this, but I've spoken to the same people. I'm like, oh man, you know, I didn't make the mobile art this way. I'm like, that's okay, you don't have to go to the mobile art.
Yes, that's a good question. The best thing is to get the standard that Prabhupada set and stick with that. Otherwise, people that are less than pure in many circumstances, you know, they may have been brought up in the movement, but it doesn't make them authorities. Authority means, you know, that one is following actually all the principles, chanting his rounds, you know, and going on with the program. So, you know, I mean, I haven't participated in this Sangha that you're talking about, but that doesn't sound really very bona fide to me that you write and say, well, I missed Mangalati this morning, and then the person writes back and says, that's okay, you don't have to go, I don't go. You know, that's fine. You should ask him, well, do you chant 16 rounds? Let's get down to the basics here first. No, no, it's okay. You don't have to chant 16 rounds. I don't chant 16 rounds. Well, what about the four regulative principles? No, no, that's all right. You don't have to follow them. I don't follow them. But I'll give you good advice. So you have to be a little careful who you get your advice from. You know, I mean, I appreciate the fact that these devotees, you know, are volunteering their time and, you know, trying to help others. But some help is not helpful. That's the problem.
Because I know that personally also, it's good they don't chant 16 rounds. Some of them don't follow the principles.
Therefore, I'm saying. So ask them first, do you chant 16 rounds and follow the four regulative principles? And if they say no, they say, thank you for being honest, and now I'll be honest with you. You're not qualified to be giving instructions or advice to anybody about spiritual life because you don't know what it's all about. That's it. Yeah. He did, yes, as a matter of fact. And we're just going to come, we'll come up to that, I think. I'll jump ahead to that section, actually, because I know Shastra is dying to hear this one. Where did he go? Oh, he's there. let me just find this section. Okay. I have this under bad chance. Well, I'll come to your question in a minute, manager. Just be patient. You're asking about other instruments in kirtan. Prabhupada did actually make some comments. And there was a letter that was written to Prabhupada by Baudak Das. At that time, he was the temple president in Vancouver. This was January the 11th, 1976. Prabhupada was in Bombay. I don't have on hand the letter that Baudak wrote, but in it there was a question about the use of harmoniums. And Prabhupada's response was that the harmonium may be played during bhajan if there is somebody who can play it melodiously, but it is not for kirtan and arati. So that's in writing from Prabhupada. Now, as far as a harmonium is concerned, and of course an accordion is an inverted, or what do you say, when it's tipped through 90 degrees, that's an accordion is a harmonium tipped on its side. The harmoniums were actually invented in the 1830s in France. You'll see that in the Gaura Arati song, there's no mention of, you know, Ki Bajaya, I mean, you know, the beautiful harmoniums, or it's just, you know, Sankabaji, Gantabaji, Baji Karatala, Maduram, Ridangabaji, yeah, not Madura, Harmonium, Bhajje, Kartals and Mridangas. And there is another comment that I found just recently where Prabhupada elaborates on this a little bit more. And this was a room conversation in December 26, 1976 in Bombay. So one Indian gentleman came and he introduced to Srila Prabhupada an older Indian couple. They were about the man was 74 years old. He was there with his wife. They didn't speak English. So this man was, you know, kind of introducing them. So he said, I brought this gentleman and this lady. They want to come here and stay and work for the institution. He is 74 years old. She is also very active and she knows very good cooking. So Prabhupada said, very good. So the man says, they cannot speak in English. That's the whole difficulty. They speak Hindi and Gujarati. So they're feeling very shy. And he's a very great expert in growing wheatgrass, which has become very popular. And he's an expert in this. He's a very good music teacher. And he is also a very good tape recordist. A puppeteer. He is also making puppets for the last 20 years. So he's expert in making puppets. So we can make Krishna Katar puppets for our theater. And he can train our young boys for the same thing. So videotape and everything, he knows all about this audio-visual communication. So Prabhupada says, everyone has got some talent. So, swakarmana tadabhyarcha, that is wanted. Whatever talent that you have should be utilized for Krishna. So then the man says, it's a little bit. He said, yes, I've known him for 22 years. He wants to utilize what he knows in Krishna's service. And Prabhupada says, yes, in Krishna consciousness, all varieties of work can be utilized. So then, again, this man repeats that he has got a very good talent of teaching Hindi and music and tape recording. She's also cooking. And he says, he plays very good harmonium, all musical instruments. So Prabhupada says, no, we don't want to introduce the harmonium. So then the man says, oh, well, I know, but that's what he's teaching at the moment. He's doing it out of force. So Prabhupada says, the other musical instrument, if he plays, his attention will be diverted to the musical instrument and not to the chanting. Oh, we have to see some melody, whether it is going on nicely. But that is not good. Our concentration should be on hearing Hare Krishna. That is bhakti. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu He's simply this kartal and call. That's all. Call means mridanga. In those days, of course, there was no harmonium, but there were many stringed instruments were there. Sitar, esraj, but these things were not used. Sometimes we do use to attract, but it is not required. So that's a more, you know, detailed explanation. Prabhupada didn't want the devotees' attention to be diverted to figuring out new melodies. We're more concerned with having a nice melody than we are in chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. So, in other words, keep it simple. Lord Chaitanya, you know, as he said, there were many other instruments, but you only ever, you see, because sometimes you see them with the horn. But, calling kartals, that's what's mentioned in the Gaura Arati song. And that is, therefore, why Prabhupada said no harmoniums during Arati and Kirtan. But he said for Bhajan it's alright. Because Prabhupada himself was very expert at playing on the harmonium. And, you know, we have so many recordings of Prabhupada doing that. And also he says, though, sometimes we do use other instruments, you know, just to attract people. So that's another principle also. That if you're going out, you know, you can go on the street, do street kirtan. We used to go out with guitars and, you know, all kinds of things. We had somebody that used to play the saxophone. And but, you know, on a principle of just attracting people to your kirtan, then you can adopt different means. But for the devotees, and that's where, you know, when you're having an arati, it's just devotees, basically. Then the concentration should just be on the holy name. And therefore, no extra instrumentation is required. Prabhupada didn't favor that. Shastra's sitting there. I'm just wondering what's going through his head now. Yes, Madhuji. In ISKCON, Prabhupada is the founder Acharya, so there's not going to be a next Acharya in that sense. Yeah. Of course, as we go along, I'm sure that there'll be some very great personalities that will appear and, you know, propagate Krishna consciousness through the, you know, agency of ISKCON. We hope there will be. There are already. It's going on. It's still going on. And more, even in the future. But as a founder of Acharya, Prabhupada, you know, set certain standards, and those can't be changed. Now, there may be some areas where, you know, there's some differences, where there's some kind of grey areas. So somebody will have to decide, you know, what's acceptable and what's not. Yeah? But at least the standards that Prabhupada's already given us, we should understand what they are, and then we should see that they don't get changed. And one example I'll give is just like Mangalarti. There's only one tune that you can sing for Mangalarti. No other tune. Yeah? What we call the morning melody. And Prabhupada was strict about that. He corrected somebody, I think, at least three times in one kirtan for singing the wrong tune at the Mangalarti. He only wanted one tune for Mangalarati, and that's it. So that can never be changed, at least in ISKCON. Now, if you go outside of ISKCON to the different Gaudiya Math temples, I was just having a little email exchange, actually, with some of the devotees about, you know, what they sing at Mangalarati in different Gaudiya Math temples. And it seems like there is no real standard. The Mangalarati that Prabhupada gave us, you know, singing the Gurvashtakam, Prabhupada's pranam mantras, Panchatattva mantra, Hare Krishna mantra, and in one tune only. And then he said, of course, you can sing Hari Harai Nama Krishna. So, you know, that's something that Prabhupada decided on. Now, I don't say that it's wrong what anybody else is doing. That's, they do whatever they like. That's their affair. But you go to different Gaudiya Math temples, some places they sing, I was told there's some song that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati wrote. So there's one or two of the mats that sing that. Then some of the other mats, you know, they sing something else. But it doesn't seem like there's any standard. I was kind of curious as to whether there was an actual standard when Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, you know, was on the planet and he had 64 mats. You know, it would be interesting, you know, a bit of research to find out what their standard was, at least in those days. But it doesn't seem like nowadays they hold to a particular standard. So we want to avoid that. As ISKCON expands, we want to keep the standard that Prabhupada wanted. Yeah. So he was very particular, at least about the morning program. And then also in the evening, you know, we always sing at the Gaura Arati, you know, we sing that song. So there are some standards, but then, you know, there may also be some occasions or other artis, somebody wants to sing something else, you know. I mean, at least in ISKCON, again, it's a controversy about, you know, what they sing in Vrindavan. Because they don't, in the Mongol Arati, they don't sing the standard. They don't sing the Gaura Stakam prayers. They sing that at Prabhupada Samadhi. But a lot of devotees don't go to Prabhupada Samadhi. They go to the temple for Mongol Arati. So they never sing the Gaura Stakam prayers. Yeah, they sing Vibhava Rishesha. Now that was introduced after Prabhupada's disappearance. But now it's become a so-called tradition. Why is it a tradition? Because everybody just started singing it, and now they don't want to change it because they got attached to it. But it's not Prabhupada's Mongol Arati. So there are some devotees that don't like it. But, you know, nowadays, you know, they're not considered to be, I mean, you know, people don't take any notice. They've got attached to singing this other mantra. So we have to be a little careful anyway, that's my point. And the Kirtan Standards Committee is hopefully going to address a lot of these issues. So the first thing I think that the committee will do is, you know, list all the things that we know for a fact Prabhupada said and wanted, like the Mongol Arati tune, you know, the mantras to be chanted there, etc. Then we'll have to look at, you know, grey areas, we'll have to look at street kirtan and, you know, bhajan, these kinds of things. So it'll take quite a while. But what we're hoping for is that we'll end up with a standard, you know, ISKCON chanter's book, you know. Yeah.
I remember in Ghana, even during my Gujarati, Bhaktisiddhanta Swami, my Guru Maharaj, he'd say I should play the accordion. Then once, Bhaktisiddhanta Swami came, he used the GBC also, and he said, no, accordion is not allowed to play the Gujarati, so I stopped playing. That part, sometime my Guru Maharaj came, and he did the puja, he asked, why am I not playing the accordion? I said, no, sorry, he said, I should play. So,
Mahavishnu. Yes.
Yes. And then I asked him, so he said, don't play during Magarati. But for Guru Puja, you can play, Tulsi Puja, you can play. And he does that. So naturally, yeah. I'm following him also.
And then, and then if I come, I'll tell you not to. Yes. So that. Yeah, you know, there's a story. There were two brahmanas, they were sitting, and there was a tall tree, and a crow flew, and as it landed on the branch, the fruit fell down. So one of the brahmanas, he said, That fruit fell because the crow landed on the branch. And then the other Brahmana said, no, actually the fruit fell before the crow landed on the branch. So in this way then they started arguing, which, you know, how did it happen? So this is crow and tail fruit logic. So Prabhupada said that we shouldn't get caught up in that. But the answer is to refer back to Srila Prabhupada first. Yeah, if there's a dispute or a disagreement between Vaishnavas, you refer back to the previous acharyas. So our principle is to refer back to Srila Prabhupada first and see what he said. And generally speaking, we hope, you know, there'll be some direct statement as in this, and it will be clear. You can't get away from what Prabhupada says there. Yeah. Now, if somebody wants to split hairs and say that, you know, an accordion is not a harmonium, even though it works exactly the same, you know, just because, you know, you can stand up with it instead of sitting down. Anyway, the principle is the same. It's not a cartel and it's not a mridanga. Right? So therefore, we can refer to the second thing that Prabhupada said, that even though there were other instruments in Lord Chaitanya's time, he only played kartals and mridanga. So there's your answer right there. So you can write and tell Mahavishnu, Maharaj. I don't mind telling him if you like, no problem. But, you know, as I say, I mean, sometimes we don't want to be fanatics about these things either. And, you know, run around telling everybody, Shastra's in Maya because he plays his accordion at the arati. It's not like that. But there's, you know, there's preferences also. There's standards, and we should look and see what they are. So there's things that Prabhupada said should be complete rules, you know, like the Mongol arati tune. There's things that Prabhupada preferred, yeah? And then there's things that we have to just decide between ourselves, you know, whether it's acceptable or not. Yeah? I was just thinking when you're saying about Bhaktitirtha Maharaj and then Kavichandra Maharaj, it's like being the ant that's sitting on the log and it's burning at both ends. Yeah. I'll give you an example about different opinions, even amongst Mahabhagwats. If you look at the philosophy of Madhvacharya, and you look at the philosophy of Ramanujacharya, they're different. If you look at the philosophy of Madhvacharya and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is different. All of them are okay, they're all correct. But at the same time, there's different angles of vision. And all of them are correct, but at the same time they're all different. You can't say that Madhvacharya is more correct than Ramanujacharya. But they actually have different views, different explanations about spiritual life. Yeah? I just thought of that. Somebody's going to correct me now. All right. Yes. Yeah, there are. There are different angles of view. There are different ways to approach Krishna. And, you know, there are considerations, time, place, and circumstance. You know, there are many different considerations that have to be taken in. Therefore, you know, as I say, Prabhupada, he decided on a particular standard. And we accept that as our standard because Prabhupada was the founder of Acharya. But we wouldn't go to a Gaudiya mat and tell them, you guys are all in Maya. Why aren't you singing the Govastakam for Mangalarati? You know, we wouldn't do that. And we wouldn't think that there was anything wrong, you know, with their performance of devotional service. But we have our standard coming from Srila Prabhupada. If we deviate from that, we are at fault. Yeah.
And my question was whether or not Bhagavad Gita makes mistakes or not. So that's kind of
well, was who comes first, Madhvacharya or Ramanujacharya? Ramanuja. So was Ramanujacharya mistaken? Because when Madhvacharya came, then he wrote something a little different from Ramanuja. No. So it depends on, you know, how you consider a mistake. So what do you mean by a mistake?
Mistakes in terms of, yeah, what they say. You know, they would, you know, give the wrong instructions or, you know, they would say the wrong things.
I would say that if something or an instructions given that is intended to bring you to the platform of surrendering to Krishna, there's no mistake. Even if it appears superficially to be mistaken, but because the intent is to make you more Krishna conscious, there's no mistake. Even if it becomes corrected. But if somebody gives an instruction which actually takes you away from Krishna, even if it appears to be correct, it's mistaken. Yes. Yes. A pure devotee is right even when he's wrong, and a non-devotee is wrong even when he's right. For that reason. Because whatever a devotee tells you is meant to bring you to Krishna. Yeah? So even if it's technically wrong, it's right. Because the result will be the same. But even if a non-devotee may be very expert in so many things and tell you, you know, all the technical details of something very correctly, but if it doesn't bring you to Krishna, it's useless. So we reject that. Because the very platform that they're standing on is wrong. But the platform that the devotee stands upon is correct. Yeah. Prabhupada said, he said a devotee is someone who knows something about everything and everything about something. Yeah, we were in Bombay in a class. He knows something about everything and he knows everything about something. That means that he doesn't know everything about everything. Right? Yeah. So he may say something that's not correct, because he doesn't know everything about that topic. But because he's actually bringing you to Krishna, it's still correct. Yeah? Yes, Prabhu. Yes. Yes, we have to be very cautious. If there are arguments going on amongst senior Vaishnavas, we have to be very cautious, you know, how we understand that. Sometimes Prabhupada would, because Prabhupada had a lot of differences of opinion with his god brothers. But he also warned us not to enter into the disagreements. Yeah, he said that's between us. In other words, you know, the disciples, they don't have any entry into that. So god brothers, they can argue. But the disciples, it's not for them to, you know, find fault like that. Yes, Brahma. No, the one behind you. Sorry. He had his hand up. So. He said what?
The wife of Lord Ramchandra is Sharmishta. Sharmishta, he said, everyone remembers child was there.
Yeah. 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 If you, you know, if you look at a lot of the conversations and things, you know, sometimes there's slips of the tongue. What we say, a slip of the tongue, where Prabhupada will say something and it's clearly not correct. Yeah. But that doesn't mean that he's not a Mahabhagavat devotee. You know, there's. I forget what the convention is. But anyway, I'll say it's a slip of the tongue. It means in just verbalizing something, then sometimes it's possible, you know, that the way the brain works and the way the tongue works, that, you know, you don't get something out exactly as you mean to get it out. But it doesn't mean, you know, that overall what you're saying is incorrect. You know, there may be some little technical discrepancy. But overall, the meaning, you know, remains the same. There is one incidence where Prabhupada did make a mistake that I know of when I was with him, and that was when the eighth canto came out. So in the eighth canto, there's a description of the fight between the demigods and the demons. And in that, it says that the blood sprayed up to the sun, up as far as the sun. So in Prabhupada's purport there, he says that then this shows that the scientists never went to the moon, or that the moon is further away than the sun. Yeah, because if the moon was closer, then it would have said that it went up to the moon and the sun. Like that. That was the idea. So when I read that, I realized that actually wasn't correct, that comment, because the, you know, Prabhupada was talking about the distance of the earth to the sun and the moon. But the verse, the battle was taking place on the shore of the ocean of milk. So I went to Srila Prabhupada and I said, Prabhupada, I think that, you know, there's a mistake in, I found a mistake in one of your purports. Prabhupada said, oh, what is that? So then I explained it and he said, oh. And then he started laughing. And he said, yes, he said, I thought this was a good opportunity to smash the scientists. So I said, all right. He said, tell the BBT to take it out. So you'll see in the new editions of the eighth canto, it's not there. So that's an apparent mistake. But the way that I understood it was, first of all, it's not a mistake in terms of, you know, the relative distances of the sun and the moon. What Prabhupada was saying there was correct, but the context that he put it in was incorrect. So I didn't take that as, you know, as being a mistake on Prabhupada's part exactly, but Prabhupada, you know, he was perfectly happy to accept that it shouldn't have been there, and he said, take it out, like that. So he had no false ego about the matter at all. He wasn't in any way, you know, defensive about it, or, you know, he said, oh, okay. Just take it out. And he just went on with his work. So that's an example. You know, but it doesn't mean that Prabhupada's not a Mahabhagavat. Mahabhagavat means that you are totally, fully, 100% surrendered to Krishna. That's all. That's the real business. That's Prabhupada's definition of perfection. And I think there's a morning walk from Los Angeles in maybe 75. Where this principle of perfection is discussed. And Prabhupada says that. It doesn't mean that he knows, you know, every little detail, how to construct a bridge, or, you know, how to build the Empire State Building or something like that. No. It just means that he knows Krishna. That's all. He knows Krishna. But Krishna is unlimited, so how can you know everything about Krishna? It's not possible. Yeah. So when we say that, you know, the spiritual master knows everything, we don't mean in the sense, in the material sense, that if we say, okay, you know everything, sit down here and design a motor car. Yeah, and if you can't do that, you're not a pure devotee. It's not like that at all. Yeah? Yes?
Going back to Kirtan.
Yes.
So, as we are on recording, we are recording this.
We are, yeah. Just a minute.
Can we play?
This is what happens when you come to these meetings.
Can we play a djembe during Guru?
Can we play?
Djembe.
A djembe.
Djembe is an African drum.
An African drum. This is a another one for Shastra.
The reason I'm asking, in early days, nobody objected. In 84, when there was a London Rath Yatra, I played, and then Bhakti Pit Swami Maharaj Lokanatma, they all danced and they enjoyed it. But when I got back, then Bhagwan Das was very angry with me, and nobody ever resisted. There is a fear in me. Then I was once playing in Chulu, I was taught that you cannot play in any Prabhupada's temple. So it's like yes or no, and then I see Ekalvya Prabhu with his trumpet all around the world. So let's go on records. Should I play yes or no?
Well, again, I think it's one of those preferences. Prabhupada has expressed his preference. Kartal Mridanga, that's what Lord Chaitanya played. Even there were other instruments available, but they didn't use them. So, and Prabhupada said clearly he didn't want that, like the harmonium being played in aartis, but it was alright for bhajan. So I would say the same thing, that there may be other instruments, there's other kinds of drums. But Lord Chaitanya's movement is especially noted for kartals and mridangas, not djembes. Yeah, although it's it's all right. I mean, in the 1974 Rath Yatra in Melbourne, I think there were three or four devotees. They got these big bass drums, and they had them. They were wearing them. Ramai Swami was one of them, and with the big sticks and boom, 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 boom like this all through. And Prabhupada was right in the middle of it, and he was dancing and he loved it. And afterwards we had a program at this place called Ormond Hall the next night or a few nights afterwards. And Prabhupada specifically asked for them to play those big, bass drums. He loved it. So in some circumstances, but I think that if we were in the arati, he would have objected. Yeah. So he's made a different, like a differentiation, And as he said, maybe for attracting people, that's one thing. Then you can play different instruments. Or let's say like when Prabhupada first started chanting in public. Anybody that came along with any instrument that they had, they were all welcome to come down and, sit down with him and just play their instruments. They were doing that at Tompkins Square Park and, they had the big kettle drums. There's that picture of Mukunda. Hippie Hill in San Francisco. So, things like that, they're preferences. I wouldn't say that, it's offensive, obviously, to play other instruments. But we should follow the preferences that Prabhupada expressed. So I would say don't play them in the arties. But if you go out on Harinam someplace and you want to, bring them out and do it, fine. Mataji.
This regarding this djembe, regarding the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, only mridanga and chaitanya. So it, I don't know, it's my experience. When I hear the Gaurarti in the temple, the kirtan, it looks like fully transcendental. And when I hear about djembe, it looks a bit like, it looks, I don't know, I'm not a judge. But the more you think, the more patient or more that's what I think. But when I hear the Gaurarti from here, in the kitchen, in the cooking, I feel very transient. It's Prabhupada and Buddhism.
Yeah.
So it's very like, more fullness. Completely more fullness.
All right.
That's what I think.
She doesn't make me play gentle anymore.
Well, husband and wife can sort that one out afterwards. Well, somebody told me that there's I don't know whether it's a song or something that Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote. Maybe one of our pundits can look this up at some time. where he describes how something like his heart swells when he hears the sound of the, you know, kartal and mridangas, or the traditional instruments, you know, that are used for glorifying the Lord. So there's a flavor to it, and I think that that's what it really gets down to, is that, you know, it's preference, it's flavor. You know, you hear the sound of the mridangas and kartals, it's so sweet. You know, that's paramarasala. Yeah, it's very, very sweet. It's the highest sweetness that you can experience. So then if you bring in all different other kinds of things, maybe it's not quite as sweet. At least to somebody's ears. Yeah. Yes.
And he was also talking about instruments, so instruments in different modes, melodies in different modes. He said a mridanga, when you hear a mridanga, it makes your heart deaf. But when you hear a tabla or anything else, you know, it doesn't make your heart deaf. Yeah. It's just instruments and melodies and different things in the modes of nature. I mean, you should try to be the mode of goodness if you can.
Yes. Well, you know, and then again, there's kirtans with modern instruments. You know, electric guitars and what have you, or somebody mentioned trumpets, or of course I don't know whether maybe something somebody could look up, whether they were actually playing horns in Lord Chaitanya's time. You see sometimes pictures, but those pictures are not necessarily, you know, coming from 500 years ago, but you see them sometimes with these big horns. But anyway, I mean, there's a certain mood, there's a vibration that comes from each instrument. And at least we know Lord Chaitanya, he, you know, his mood was kartals and mridangas. That's what he loved to hear. If you know of any quotes, I'd appreciate if you can dig those out and let me have those. You, Vidvan, you seem to know something about what I mentioned about Bhaktivinoda Thakur. If you can find that quote for me, because I looked for it, but I couldn't find it. Find it for me and email it to me. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, there's a certain mood that's set up according to the instruments that are being played. You know, and some of them will raise you up and some of them may lower you down a bit, you know. Yes.
This, if you see the history of the world, the traditional, say the Africans were playing djembe, the people, I've never seen mridanga before in that area in Africa. The first time we saw was when ISKCON devotees came across. So in this region, Bengal, they came up with this mridanga. And the Italians, the Romans, they come up with the big, you know. So every region has some sort of instruments, and it became popular. But sometimes we see certain things attract. And Srila Prabhupada in Tompkins Square, the first day, there was no mridanga. It was just, I think it was a small place drum, or maybe it was playing.
He had a tom-tom.
Tom-tom, right.
Yeah. But that's because that's all he could get. He wanted a mridanga. He was writing to India, send me mridangas. But they weren't sending, so he had to use whatever was available. And Prabhupada's chanting was pure and transcendental, so it still had all, you know, the full effect. But as soon as Prabhupada got a mridanga, you never see him playing a tom-tom anymore. Right? That was just a fill-in. And if we take it that, you know, Lord Chaitanya's in the spiritual world, and he's relishing the sound of the mridanga and kartals, as it says there in the song, then, you know, we should understand that's the best expression of, you know, tunes or instruments for playing kartal, for playing kirtan. Yeah, that's the sweetest, because that's the one that Lord Chaitanya has. There's no mention of him playing djembes, you know, or tom-toms or whatever else. Yeah.
Just a comment from the guys that was not a comment. The mridanga is a manifestation of Krishna's spirit, actually.
Mridanga is?
It's a manifestation of Krishna's flute.
It's a manifestation of Krishna's flute.
He said when Krishna and Radharani, I read this somewhere, when they actually, they merged to that, the manifestation of Mahaprabhu, then the flute transformed into the Mridanga.
Okay. If you can find that quote for me, that would be very useful. I'd like to see that.
And then I have a question. Right. What about ladies singing kirtans and bhajans and so on? What does Prabhupada say about
What did Prabhupada say about ladies singing kirtan and bhajan? Prabhupada approved it. When I first joined in Sydney in 72, there was one devotee, Mother Jagatarini. She had just come back from Hong Kong. She was there with Burijan, her husband, and it was a very tough place. They were preaching there. There's just the two of them. So she flew back to Sydney because Prabhupada was visiting and she just wanted to get some association. So in the evening arati, somebody started to lead and Prabhupada stopped them and then he told Jagatarini to lead. And he was very happy to hear her singing the lead there. So that's one example that I can give. In general, Prabhupada, usually had the males lead, but he wasn't against women leading. I know this is a kind of a controversial topic, how much should the ladies lead things or not lead things and stuff like that. But generally speaking, the tradition, of course, is that the ladies have their own kirtan groups. That was going on in Bombay when Prabhupada was there. There was a ladies used to meet every week, and they would have their own bhajan kirtan groups, and the men would have their own. And in general, that principle of separation of the sexes is being upheld, because if it's not, if there's free mixing, then we know that inevitably in Kali Yuga everything degrades very quickly. And then, you only have to look at the history of Vaishnavism to see what happened after Lord Chaitanya's disappearance within a couple of hundred years. The whole Vaishnav, movement had just become, like one big excuse for sex, illicit sex, being justified on the basis of, Rasa-lila and all these different things. By the time Bhaktivinoda Thakur was preaching, Vaishnavism was considered to be the lowest class form of religion, practically on the planet. Everybody just used to think about it as just being some kind of debauched, sexual thing, perverted sexual activity. So he had to restore it back to its proper standards. So there is a danger, and therefore we should err on the side of caution. But at the same time, we shouldn't think that, there's something wrong with the ladies leading a kirtan or having bhajans or giving classes. If they're actually Krishna conscious, then that's fine. Prabhupada had no problem with that, and there's no reason why we should. The problem comes is because we're not very pure, and then all of these, rajas, tamas, moods, they start creeping in. That's the problem. This is a big topic, I'm not going to get into it tonight. I did give a class a couple of years ago in the MIHET, why Prabhupada said that women are less intelligent than men. And there are, Shastric reasons, there's psychological reasons why that's true. But in Krishna consciousness, higher or lower doesn't make any difference materially if you're chanting Hare Krishna. And if you're practicing, the principles of devotional service, you have an equal chance to go back home, back to Godhead. But on the relative platform, there are differences. And anybody, who is at least a little bit honest will admit that. There are differences between different grades of men. You know, there's differences between Brahmanas and Sudras. There's differences between men and women. There are even differences between different races. Yeah. Of course, nowadays, if you bring these things up and speak honestly, you know, although people want to be politically correct, but if anybody starts to speak honestly, they immediately get hammered. Yeah. So sometimes it's not possible to speak the truth. But it's there in the Shastra. Not everybody's created equal. In fact, everybody's different. Yeah. And there are general differences and there are, you know, individual differences. At the same time, everybody is equal. So understanding the equality and the, you know, the differences, that requires a sober brain. Yeah. You can't get all emotional. You have to get very dispassionate about the whole thing. And you have to see it very objectively. So, we're in the material world. We're a spiritual movement. So in that sense, you know, it's the same for everybody. But because we're not pure devotees, then we have to be very cautious. And there are some social conventions which have to be observed in order to preserve, you know, the integrity of human interaction. Integrity means that it's meant for progressive advancement in spiritual life. If you don't preserve those social conventions, everything breaks down and then it becomes havoc. Yeah? Then there's no standards, there's no rule and regulation. And what does Krishna say about, you know, those who don't observe the rules and regulations? Then, you know, na sukham, na param gatim. You don't get any happiness and you don't get the ultimate destination. So there are rules and regulations and they have to be observed. And that applies, you know, between the sexes. It applies within the sexes. You know, there's different protocols. Yeah? Just like, you know, we have senior devotees, we have junior devotees, we have this kind, that. There's protocols. If you break the protocols, then you're risking havoc. And the end result will be that everything will just become a mishmash, a free-for-all, and the whole purpose will be lost. We deviated a little bit off the off the topic there. It's 7 o'clock, so we're going to finish. And tomorrow, we'll look at another aspect of chanting. What's happening here? Chanting saves you from death. That will be the topic tomorrow. Okay. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.